550, the progressive voice of Minnesota. FYI Politics, Brett Johnson. It is a Friday afternoon. I am live with my show today, so you're welcome to call in at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Hearing that weather forecast before we jumped on the airwaves. Patrick, I hope you are wrong about those thunderstorms this afternoon. I have planned to do a little biking into the evening hours, so I'm hoping you are 100% wrong on that.
Well, the good news is I'm not the weather man. The good news also is it was only a 20% chance, so
yeah,
not a real high chance you're going to get rained on.
Yeah, all right, I'll take my chances with that. Patrick Lilia back in the studio today. So you took a little vacation this week. You ended up going, you said, to the coast of Oregon. I have not been there myself, but I imagine you got some pretty good views, some good photos, among other things.
I did. So I made it out, just the short version of this, I made it out to a place called Cannon Beach, which is on the west coast of Oregon, probably a little ways west of Portland, about an hour and a half drive. So I made it out on the beach. I took some photos. And as I said, when I got here, or when you got here, rather, just long enough to take a few photos. And then I had to get back on the road and head back to Minneapolis after that.
It's not a short drive either. So you said, what, 2.5 days is what it took you to get out there?
Yeah, I left on Saturday afternoon. I made it to Rapid City, South Dakota for the first night. So that was about 9 hours in total, I think. So I got there about midnight mountain time or somewhere thereabouts. So then the next night I was in Missoula, Montana. And then the night after that, I got to the Oregon coast just in time for the last of the sunset. Just an FYI, Seattle traffic is terrible. I will never complain about Twin Cities traffic ever again.
Really? So Seattle is back to getting traffic, at least here in Minnesota. I don't think I've been in a traffic jam since like March.
Yeah,
we've had such a lack of traffic, and it sounds like Seattle's kind of going back to normal with their usual flow.
Yeah, and apparently what I was understanding, I have a friend who lives out there, and he said, this is still pandemic traffic. That trip that you took from Seattle down to Olympia that took me about, 90 minutes because of the stop-and-go traffic. You said that can take 2 hours during regular times.
Okay, so they were, yeah, seeing some lighter traffic, just it's much worse than what we have in the Twin Cities. Yeah, we're supposed to be one of the worst metropolitan areas for heavy traffic. Apparently, Seattle sounds like they have it much worse than us if they're still getting those traffic jams. I mean, here in the cities, you can still run into it occasionally on 494 in France, even during the pandemic era. But I haven't seen that many since I've been occasionally driving around since March. I think maybe one or two times I could have been in what could qualify as a traffic jam. But one of the few benefits, I guess, of having people staying at home, a little easier to get around. Not necessarily a good trade-off, but one of the things that certainly has happened. Hey, by the way, as long as we're on this topic here, Patrick, this was actually from the Minnesota Department of Transportation, MnDOT, talking about if you've ordered your new license tabs, like let's say they're coming up due right now, apparently it's taking quite some time to get those actually delivered. It's taken upwards of 6 weeks for some people that they're reporting. So apparently that's why they're bringing in more workers at the DMV locations around Minnesota. So, yeah, you can still end up paying for your new license tabs, but you might still have to wait when they're going to actually arrive.
It's actually really odd that you bring this up now because I did have to renew my tabs this month.
Mm-hmm.
I renewed them right before a couple days before I left on my trip, and I kind of wondered when they were going to get here because I had, it was a buffer of about 2 weeks. I think I ordered them on the 15th or 16th, so I had about, 2 weeks for them to arrive, and I already had them in my mail when I returned home yesterday, so that was good news.
Good news for Patrick Lilia. All right, let's go to the news for today, and this is out of the Minneapolis City Council. Are they sort of backing off on this idea of abolishing the police? Kind of reads this way as I looked at the article written up in the Star Tribune. So let's give you the news as to what happened in the city council this morning as they did make some announcements about what their plans are with the Minneapolis Police Department. So during a morning meeting, the council voted to advance a proposal that would create a new Department of Community Safety and Violence Prevention. And within that, there still could be a division of law enforcement services that would potentially include licensed police officers. So not necessarily a full abolition of the police department. Council President Lisa Bender described the proposal as one step in a direction to create safety for every single resident of the city. She said it's a structural change that allows us to invest in a holistic approach to safety using evidence-based strategies, using the brilliance and expertise of their staff from all the disciplines with all different kinds of experience. So the new department they're trying to again create would be called the Department of Community Safety and Violence Prevention, and still a chance there could be a division of law enforcement located within the new Department of Safety and Violence Prevention. So for all of this to happen, the city would need to change its charter, which of course kind of serves as the constitution for Minneapolis. Basically, it's like the constitution that we have for Minnesota or the United States. That's essentially what a charter means. And a change in the charter would need the approval from voters. Council members are using, though, an unconventional expedited process as they seek to get the measure on the November ballot. So the charter requires the city council to fund a police force of at least 0.0017 employees per resident and provide those employees compensation. So if you use that formula, that means the Minneapolis Police Department needs a minimum right now of 730 police officers, according to that formula in the charter. How they came up with 0.0017 as their number, a little beyond me, but we'll continue. Right now, the department has more than 730 officers, though. They have 892 and 175 non-sworn employees at the beginning of the month. So, yeah, if you add that 892 plus 175, you get a little over 1,000 officers. So in normal times, the charter amendments would be considered over the course of many months. But since the election is coming up in November and they'd like to get this ballot question or this charter change on the ballot, well, they got to expedite the process. So the council would consider whether to send the matter to the Charter Commission, which would give a recommendation. Then the council would write on whether to send the proposal to the ballot, and then Mayor Jacob Fry would also need to approve or veto sending it to the voters. So yeah, there's a lot of steps to take. So not only does the city council have to vote on this, then they have to send it to something called the Charter Commission, which would give their recommendation. And then finally from there, it goes to Mayor Jacob Fry, who can veto the thing altogether. So there's the nuts and bolts about how this could work. So with an August 21st deadline for submitting items to the ballot this year, that's of course in November, the city is moving forward on a rare expedited schedule that, and this is key right here, would only include one public hearing. The amendment was introduced this morning and will now move before both the City Council and Charter Commission simultaneously. Not immediately clear whether such a process at this expedited pace has ever happened in the city of Minneapolis. So, yeah, as to whether you think that's drastic enough or are they backtracking, well, that's up for your own interpretation, since technically they can still have licensed police officers, where it's essentially just a division within a division. So, yeah, if you look at it pessimistically, essentially they're just moving police officers under a different umbrella, I'm assuming, under this new division of law enforcement, which would be under the new Department of Community Safety and Violence Prevention. Yeah, there's a whole lot of names to keep track of in here, to be quite honest. But, yeah, it's effectively just a department within a department. It would still be licensed police officers. As to whether they would still be operating under the police union remains to be seen. I suppose if they were to keep the police officers, but at least not them, have them be part of the union, yeah, that potentially could be a good thing. But really, other than that, there's not a whole lot of other details as to what they're proposing in the city council. Certainly, as they start approaching that August 21st deadline, we'll be learning much more about this. But I'm hoping they can have more than just one public hearing. This is a significant change that's going to be made to the city of Minneapolis, and I think people do have a right to certainly chime in on this, but they have until August 21st to get this all done. That is less than 2 months away. Again, the 21st is the deadline for trying to get this on the ballot that everyone would have a chance to vote for. And I think people are going to chime in with strong feelings, either thinking that, well, we're abolishing the police, even though they're really not by the looks of it, or others thinking they're not going far enough, and essentially they're just shifting police officers from one department to another. We're at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I was going to talk about the voting process in Minnesota in just a second, but looks like we already got Gary in Minneapolis on the phone lines who wanted to chime in on that topic. So let's get to Gary. How are you doing today, Gary?
Hi. I early voted today, and in town here anyways, you can vote in the courthouse and probably the whole county as far as I know. And then the parking's kind of hard there, but 980 Hennepin, I voted over there, and you can, they have a big parking lot. Each head of it, I think, and I pulled in. I got curbside to vote from my car. They told me I was the first one to vote today. Today's the first day. That really relieves a lot of pressure for people to get down there on election day, and sometimes you stand in long lines. I don't know how it's going to work this year with the pandemic, but that's what I did. I always try to vote early, so I'm just suggesting that to other people if they get it over with. And the one problem is a couple of things I wasn't prepared to vote for, so I had to guess one or two, but most of it I knew. And so later in the campaign, you learn more about the candidates.
Yeah.
Can I say one more thing?
Oh, go ahead, yes.
You know, Mark that calls in, I've met him at the Blue State Mall. I really appreciate all the stuff he says about the foreign policy and the war machine. Because I think, like a lot of Americans, we need to wind down this thing other than that and take care of our homeless and people hurting and poverty in this country a lot more. I hate these people standing begging for money. They shouldn't have cut that welfare so much. They could have cut it, but help people so they don't have to go out in the street corners. Anyways, this war machine also, I think it creates more problems. It's pretty evident that it helps a lot of the time.
All right, appreciate the phone call, Gary. Respond to a few of your comments right there. I would definitely take his advice and vote as early as possible. I'm going to get to this story in just a few minutes, but a quick preview of it is that basically the city of Minneapolis is estimating 70% of the vote to come in by mail, which I think is way too low when you consider that in Kentucky's primary, which took place on Tuesday, they're estimating 85% of people were voting by mail. And I would just assume that Minnesota, having more lax requirements on voting by mail, would probably have a number perhaps even bigger than 85%. So, yeah, that could be worrying. So I would certainly take Gary's advice and vote as early as possible if you do plan on voting in this fall's election. We'll have more about that a little bit later on, probably in the next segment or so. In fact, you know what? Let's take a break and come on back, because I want to talk more about what's happening with the police in Minneapolis and give you an update about what could be happening in the state legislature on public safety. So that's on the way next here on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
If you have a painting project, you should consider hiring Nick Slavic Painting and Restoration Company. We've been awarded nationally for craftsmanship, are highly professional, responsive, and fairly priced. If you feel overwhelmed by starting a painting project, we make it easy from start to finish. We move furniture, vacuum, sweep, dust, and put your home back the way we found it. There is a difference. Our professionalism sets us apart. Visit NICKSLAVIK.com. That's NickSlavic.com to learn more.
Connections Radio Show is all about tapping into our hardwired hunger to connect. We examine meaningful connections to ourselves, our community, and the world around us. By opening the door to innovative insights by a wide variety of interesting guests, we'll make the connections to something bigger than ourselves. Join me, Lori Fitz, your host of Connections Radio Show, and together, we'll make the connections. Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
During this stay-at-home time, many of us are getting around to what needs doing at home. So how is your vacuum cleaner running? Is it time to get it repaired or maybe even replaced? Great news. A1 Vacuum in Roseville is open for curbside service. We're here from 10 until 2 Monday through Saturday. Give us a call at 651-222-6316 to place your order for curbside supplies, repairs, or replacements. Find more information and updates at a-1vacuum.com.
Hi, this is Ken Hagland, host of Living Healthy and Aging Well, inviting you to listen to our new show airing on Saturdays from noon to 1, where we talk about your health and your life and provide insights to living and aging well. Each week, we provide answers to important questions regarding health care, elder care, end-of-life care, and caregiver support to help you and your loved ones plan for the future and enjoy your highest quality of life today. Please join us every Saturday from noon to 1 for Living Healthy and Aging Well.
Are your remote workers putting your company at risk? Not sure what steps to take to secure your data? Hi, Mark Sommerfeld from Rimark. The Rimark team is guiding our clients through these difficult times. In fact, demand has been so high, we created an easy-to-follow guide with the 5 steps to securely work from home. It's yours free. Download our 5 steps to securely work from home now at RimarkIT.com or call 651-328-8900 for a no-cost how-to discussion.
If you're looking to save money on your home or building improvement project, check out Better Futures Minnesota's reuse retail warehouse in South Minneapolis. We carry salvaged building materials such as cabinetry, flooring, plumbing fixtures, appliances, lighting, and more, saving you money and saving the planet by keeping these items out of the landfill, by giving them another life. Selections change daily, and we also take donations. Go to betterfuturesminnesota.com and look under Reuse Warehouse to learn more. Let us know AM 950 sent you.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Hey, coming up at 3 o'clock, we have another fill-in host for Matt McNeil. Today, it's going to be Representative Mary Kunesh Poudin. Yeah, we got a sitting rep filling in for Matt McNeil. That'll be coming up during the 3 to 4 p.m. hour. I'm sure she'll be talking about the debacle of what happened in the state legislature over the past few weeks. And she'll have some other guests that I think she's going to be speaking to as well. So, yeah, that's Mary Kunesh Poudin filling in for Matt McNeil coming up from 3 until 4 p.m. All right, so let's go back and talk about what was voted on in the city council this morning in Minneapolis. So they're creating a new Department of Community Safety and Violence Prevention. And as they said, there still could be a division of law enforcement services with licensed police officers within that new department that would be created. So a couple of questions we got to ask about this, because if there is going to be a division of law enforcement with police officers, well, how often are these police officers going to be dispatched when someone dials 911? Because if it looks like the system we currently have set up now, well, then you're just pretty much shifting police officers from one department to another. So that's a big question that's got to be asked about this. If you dial 911, who's going to respond to that call? Is it going to be people from the Division of Law Enforcement Services? Or is it going to be a mental health professional or someone else who might be better suited to deal with it deal with the situation? Because oftentimes when you call 911, you really don't need a police officer to show up that is armed with a gun. Most emergencies, when you end up calling 911, you typically don't need an officer that is armed. Now, I do get the need that sometimes if you are in a direct emergency, whether that's like a domestic violence situation and there is an immediate threat to someone, maybe not the best example, but let's say if someone has a gun and they're threatening people, maybe in that case you would bring out armed officers. Just throwing out some hypothetical scenarios, or if you have an active shooter situation, you could bring out licensed officers. But yeah, that's a big question as to how often these licensed police officers would be deployed when you dial 911. So yeah, let me know what you think about that at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Still lots more to learn about this proposal, but hopefully it's not just the case where we're just shifting police officers from one department to another. So why are we doing this? Here's another example of why there is this movement to completely change the police. This was from, even though this didn't take place in Minnesota, this happened in North Carolina. It's still emblematic of the problems we face with police officers in our country. Three members of the North Carolina Police Department, I believe that's the state police they're referring to, have been fired after a department audit of a video recording captured one of the officers saying a civil war was necessary to wipe black people off the map and that he was ready, quote unquote. That's from the Raleigh News and Observer, Raleigh News and Observer. One officer said he was going to buy a new assault rifle and soon we're just going to go out and start slaughtering them, expletive, in reference to black people. He said, I can't wait. God, I can't wait. He added that he felt a civil war was needed to wipe them off the expletive map. That'll put them back about four or five generations. And by the way, that's not an isolated incident where you have police officers getting caught sometimes saying these types of things. The investigative reporting organization, it's called Reveal, actually conducted a big investigation about this, I think like 2 or 3 years ago, where they were able to get onto a number of these Facebook groups that were run by different police officers, and they found hundreds and hundreds of these officers who were affiliated with these right-wing sort of militia groups who were making racist statements. They were making anti-Muslim statements. So yeah, this is not an isolated incident. It just happens that these three North Carolina officers were dumb enough to be caught on camera. In fact, according to this, it was one of the officers who ended up accidentally recording this video. So, yeah, probably not a good idea on their part, but good that we at least know that these three guys have been fired. They should probably be facing something beyond that because this happens so often sometimes with law enforcement where they just end up going to another department. But that's some very, very shocking audio that we picked up from what was recorded with these guys saying that, yeah, we need another civil war, and they're anxious to go out and start slaughtering black people. That is just unbelievable that those were three licensed police officers in North Carolina. Yeah, wow, caught on video saying that. Also responding in terms of what's happening with the police, what's going to be happening in the state legislature? Well, Minnesota Senate Republicans said yesterday that they are going to be holding an oversight hearing on the state of the local response to the unrest and rioting that rocked the Twin Cities a few weeks ago. We still saw nothing passed in terms of police reform, not that anything at the state level would really do very much, but instead of taking actions that could potentially save lives. Instead, we're going to be holding oversight hearings talking about how statues were getting torn down. Yeah, that's going to be part of these supposed hearings coming up during the next special session. So certainly some tone deafness from Minnesota Senate Republicans that we're going to be holding these hearings coming up in July. And a big, big disconnect right there, too. So that is coming up, special session, more hearings on statues being torn down and property being destroyed. Now, the property destruction part, as we've talked about before, it's certainly not good if you're a business owner, a local business owner, and your property gets burned down. But let's also make sure we're focusing more on the human element as well. So that's certainly the disconnect we're seeing there with Minnesota Senate Republicans and DFLers in the House who actually do want to pass some sort of police reform. To me, that's still more symbolic, though, since what's happening at the city council, as we're saying, is going to have a much bigger impact on changing the law enforcement system in Minnesota. All right, one more story before we hit the break, and Gary was talking about this just a second ago, how he was voting. So the head of elections in Minneapolis is making plans for how they're going to be voting in this fall's elections. This was written up by Peter Callahan over in MinnPost, and they're talking about how there's signs encouraging masks and social distancing. They're going to be having sanitized pens, plexiglass shields. They're going to be separating voters from poll workers with those plexiglass shields. And they'll have notifications indicating whether voting booths have been sanitized after the previous voter. But here's the part that has me a little worried is that their estimates are showing that only 70% of people are going to be voting by mail. And just as I talked about earlier, the estimates we saw out of Kentucky when that number was over 85%, that still could lead to some real problems if we're going to be significantly underestimating the amount of people who are going to be voting by mail. All right, we're going to take a break and come on back with more on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson, as we're going to be talking about and switching gears to talk about what's happening with student loan debt. That's something that has not gone away amid the COVID-19 pandemic. And we're going to be speaking with Alan Kolinge of Student Loan Justice about some of the moves that he would like to be seen made in terms of trying to cancel student loan debt, and also give us a take on what the politicians are thinking about in terms of canceling student loan debt. So that's going to be up next here on FYI Politics.
Standard Heating and Air Conditioning knows it's June when us Minnesotans finally stop talking about how cold it is and start talking about how hot it is, which is the perfect time for Standard's Summer Is Here sale. During June, you can save $900 on a new air conditioner with payments as low as $47 a month for 0% financing. Find out more about these great savings at standardheating.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, the comfort you deserve since 1930.
Hello, humans. This is me, Ellie Krug, with Ellie 2.0 Radio on Monday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. Our featured idealist this week is Patrice Cullors, one of the founders of Black Lives Matter. The big interview is with Mick Monique Durgis, who is pushing the University of St. Thomas to become more LGBTQ-friendly. In my C block, I've got a montage of a couple of things I talk about. The great awakening that America is going through right now. Ellie 2.0 Radio, engaging and real on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
I'm a retired school psychologist, and helping people was my thing. After my stroke, when Meals on Wheels started, I was on the other end of the stick, so to speak. My name is Julius Gaines, creative writer, poet, photographer.
One in six seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Drop off a hot meal and say a quick hello. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at americaletsdolunch.org. This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. I'm a better neighbor because my service has taught me how important it is to be a team player. My training helps me in my classes when I give attention to detail to the task at hand. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country safe from threats. Learn more about how you too can live and serve part-time by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
If you're someone that counts on AM 950 to bring you the latest in progressive politics, news, and talk, remember, we can't do it alone. Support our many great advertisers and let them know you heard about their business on AM 950. If you don't know who to talk to, simply write AM 950 on your receipt. AM 950 is supported by small, local businesses, so you're not only helping us and those businesses, but our local economy as well. For a complete list of our sponsors, log on to am950radio.com.
Now, more than ever, we are being faced daily with the topic of human mortality. And for many people, estate planning has been top of mind. Getting your estate planning done now can be easy and cost-effective. Schroman Law offers virtual options for initial consultations so that new clients can safely initiate the process. With many facing uncertain financial situations, Schroman Law also offers affordable fees for legal documents. Learn more at schromanlaw.com. That's schromenlaw.com.
AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lilly. A slight chance of thunderstorms late this afternoon, otherwise 85 degrees, dropping down to 64 and clear overnight tonight. Our eight local Minnesota restaurants are getting set to reopen their dining rooms in the near future, but in the meantime, make sure to support some of our eat local options with takeout, such as Great Wall Restaurant, Cafe Latte, Park Tavern, and Hazel's Northeast. Check them out today and place your takeout order now.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Well, we're going to welcome back Alan Kolinge of Student Loan Justice back to the show. He's been on the program a number of times talking about the importance of not only just canceling our student loan system and canceling student loans, but also just reforming the lending system overall, as this is certainly a very important topic to be talking about, being that lots of people out there are not going to be able to afford their student loans with the COVID-19 pandemic. So, Alan, thanks for so much for coming back on the show today.
Well, it's great to be with you, Brett.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's dive into what the situation right now is for student loans. Has anything changed since COVID-19 with the CARES Act?
Well, you know, unfortunately, what we have seen is a six-month payment suspension and also a suspension on interest and collection activities. So, you know, to Congress's credit, student loan borrowers will not be burdened with at least having to pay over the next now 5 months. But, you know, I have to say, Brett, this lending system was, I have to say, a failure even before the COVID-19 crisis happened. You know, I spoke to the recently stepped down COO of the federal lending program, Wayne Johnson, a week or two ago. And he said that about 80% of federal student loan borrowers will never be able to repay their loans.
That's an unreal number. 80%, four out of every five, will never pay these back.
Four out of every five are either currently in deferment, forbearance, they're in default, they're delinquent, or they're paying, but their balance is going up. And so it's really gone over the cliff at this point. And this was before the corona crisis, by the way. It can only get far worse as this crisis continues to persist.
And even looking at the suspension, at least in student loan payments, it only is good through September 30th, and it's not like that part of your debt is forgiven. You still eventually have to pay that back. It's only a delay in your payments, which I guess is somewhat helpful, but really not that big of a move.
Well, it's really kind of a sop to Cerberus, if you ask me. It's delaying the inevitable. And not only that, you know, after 6 months of not paying on their loans, and who knows what the employment situation is going to be like at the end of this, I just don't think that very many people are going to be able to, or maybe even willing to, happily start repaying on their student loans. You know, I spoke to the head of the lending program, and with 80% in severe distress, one can only imagine how bad it's going to be, you know, 6 months from now. I mean, frankly, you know, for many years, we've been calling for the return of bankruptcy protections to student loans. Student loans are the only type of loan in the country to be uniquely stripped of this constitutional protection. But at this point, I have to say it may be too late. I think at this point, Wayne Johnson, the former COO of the program, agrees, at this point, it's time for widespread cancellation of these loans. I just don't see any better option at this point. And, you know, we're seeing at least one or two bills come through Congress calling for student loan cancellation. But unfortunately, all of those bills require raising $1-2 trillion or more in taxes, so that the lenders can be paid to forgive the loans. And really, that's just, it's a non-starter. It's just, it makes no sense. Because really, if you think about it, 90% of all student loans are federal student loans. So the taxpayer already paid for these loans many years ago. And it turns out that the president has the executive authority to cancel all federally held student loans without requiring one dime of congressional tax appropriation and without adding even a penny to the national debt. So it turns out in the current crisis, this is really the low-hanging fruit on the, you know, fiscal stimulus tree, if you will.
So I want to go back to what you were just saying, because as you were bringing up, these are federal loans, which in essence we've already paid for with our taxes, and this idea that we need to make sure the lenders are whole. You don't quite agree with that idea. That's going to be in a number of these proposals. But that aspect you just brought up, being that these are federal loans, it's really interesting, because we almost hear no one talking about that part when it comes to student loans.
Well, that's kind of the hidden dark side of the student loan system. You know, the Department of Education, while it is certainly a public agency, and it should be, you know, serving the interests of the students and the taxpayers first and foremost. But the reality is that the department is really out for itself. It's been set up to run like a private bank. And, you know, the big sign of prestige in Washington apparently isn't, you know, how many students did you help go to college? It's, you know, how big is your budget? And so the Department of Education and its lobbyists and experts and so forth are quite adamant that it needs to be paid a dollar for every dollar in loans that it forgives or cancels. But, I mean, that's just simply nonsense. It doesn't have to be that way. As I said, not only have the taxpayers already funded these loans many years ago, the Department of Education, it turns out, has been making somewhere between $50, $60, $70 billion a year in profit on the lending system since 2010. So if you look at the $1.5 trillion outstanding in federally held loans, it turns out that, and nobody knows exactly, but it turns out that something like $300, $400, $500 billion of that is unpaid principal, and the rest is just interest. So if you consider the profit that's already been made over the past 10 years, it's quite clear that, you know, the president could cancel all federal loans tomorrow, and the taxpayer on balance would be probably breaking even or maybe even in the black a little bit. And so this, I mean, truly, there's no better way to stimulate the economy. You know, taxes are on the wealthy are already cut to the bone. And any other spending plan that you can think of is going to require, you know, adding to the national debt or raising taxes or somehow some other way of getting money. And so, you know, I don't see anything better than the cancellation of student loans if you really want to dramatically stimulate the economy. And probably help the people who need the help the most.
So you've, of course, been calling on President Donald Trump to cancel student loans, and at least right now, it's very slim chance that that is actually going to happen. But I don't know. He's always been an interesting guy, President Donald Trump, where if you can frame an issue in a certain way, maybe you can get him on your side. Is there any sort of argument you could even think of that might move some people that wouldn't typically maybe side with you on this idea of student loans? I mean, I'm thinking maybe we could convince Donald Trump that Joe Biden is in bed with some of these lenders. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, you raise a very interesting point. You know, Jimmy Carter said, of all things President Trump is, he is malleable. And while you are absolutely right, it's a pretty slim chance, you know, historically, the Republicans have been really anti-borrower. They have really turned the screws down on the student loan borrowers over the years. But at the same time, you know, this is really sort of a big government problem. And Donald Trump said he was going to come in and drain the swamp. And, you know, conservative Grover Norquist said, you know, government should be small enough so that if you have to, you can take it to the bathroom and drown it in the tub. Well, you know, I don't see any better opportunity for that than by resetting this federal lending system. I mean, you can really put this in conservative terms. I guess you could also throw in the fact that Joe Biden, Delaware senator, he's got a lot of baggage in his closet on the student loan issue. Mm-hmm. He has been very friendly with the not only Department of Education interests, but even more so the private student loan companies like Sallie Mae and others. So I would say there's a slim possibility here. It would be the right thing to do. There's no doubt, but you know, I wouldn't want to put the odds on it, but the odds are quite slim. Donald Trump and Betsy DeVos have been kind of a nightmare on this issue, quite frankly, over the past 3.5 years. But, you know, there's always a chance. And if not the current president, then, you know, the executive authority will exist for the next president if we're not successful with this one. But I hold out some hope. I'm always a hopeful guy, and we'll mm-hmm. see what happens.
Yeah. Probably a slim chance, but I would at least make the argument if he were to go out today and cancel student loans, he would guarantee his reelection in 2020. I would say that for sure, but that's an entirely different discussion. Go ahead, Alan.
Well, that's a great point. You know, there's 55 million people in the country who either have student loans or are co-signed on them. So 80% of that is like 44 million people. And while I Donald Trump's going to have a very hard time in this upcoming election, I suspect. But certainly he wouldn't be hurting himself at all by making this move. It would be, frankly, a good conservative thing to do, and it makes a lot of sense, but we'll see.
Yeah, indeed. Let's talk about his, well, likely Democratic opponent, Joe Biden. You were alluding to him a few minutes ago that he does have some ties to the student loan industry, but the other day he was putting out a plan that would at least partially cancel student debt. Can you talk a little bit about his plan and whether you think that goes far enough?
Yeah, no, his plan does not go far enough. Any plan, any student loan cancellation plan that requires Congress to raise taxes to pay for that, I really think it's a non-starter. I mean, and by the way, I'm all for raising taxes on the wealthiest in this country. But if you're going to do that, why are you going to take that money and give it to the Department of Education? I mean, that makes no sense. Why wouldn't you put it into, you know, an infrastructure plan or other spending plan that really does something? And also with Biden's plan, there is a cap on the forgiveness. And unfortunately, as I said, the Department of Education really does not have the best interests of the borrowers at heart. And so any cancellation plan that goes through the Department of Education is simply not credible. We already know that, for example, the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, 99% of the people who thought they were going to get their loans forgiven last year found out no, they were rejected for, by and large, bureaucratic reasons. You know, they didn't dot their I's and cross their T's. So this is the way the Department of Education runs its cancellation programs. And so I would say that's really sort of a joke. But I will say, you know, we followed Joe Biden very closely in Iowa. I got eyeball to eyeball with him many times. And to his credit, he has, since Elizabeth Warren dropped out, he has agreed to adopt her bankruptcy plan. And so that's not nothing. Elizabeth Warren is calling for, as we are also calling for, the return of bankruptcy protections to student loans. But, you know, Elizabeth Warren promised that on day one, she would do an executive order which would enforce bankruptcy rights for student loan borrowers. And Joe Biden has not yet made that pledge. So we continue to push Joe really hard, but I would have much rather seen a Bernie or an Elizabeth Warren in there who was maybe a little more credible and trustworthy on this topic.
And going back to those bankruptcy protections, which are not provided for student loans, at least if, yeah, he is on board for that, it's certainly a step in the right direction. That still strikes me as just being unreal that student loans are one of the only things that you don't have any bankruptcy protections are on. Can you talk a little bit about the history of that and how that even came to be?
Yeah, it is baffling. You know, the founding fathers themselves, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Robert Morris, many of these men were being absolutely skewered under debt to British banks and merchants. So when they declared independence and wrote the Constitution, turns out they called for uniform bankruptcy laws. And they called for this ahead of the power to declare war, ahead of the power to raise an army and build a navy, in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. And, you know, today, 250 years later, every loan in this country has the same basically uniform bankruptcy coverage as all other loans. Student loans, however, are the one exception to that. So they started sort of monkeying around with the bankruptcy laws on student loans in the 1970s. And over the next 25 years, they managed to nickel and dime away this protection to the point where, hence, it's impossible to discharge student loans in bankruptcy today. And, you know, this, to me, this is a clear violation of our rights to, you know, equal protection under the law. And certainly the way bankruptcy is treated, or the way student loans are treated, is not uniform vis-a-vis every other loan in this country. But, you know, bureaucracy is a very stubborn thing. And we've been working on this problem for 15 years now, and I am just astonished to tell you that we have been unable to get this obvious solution to the lending program restored. And it really is, at the core of it, the heart of the problem. You know, in the absence of bankruptcy protections, this gives the lenders carte blanche to abuse the borrowers and turn $20,000 loans into $70,000 loans or $100,000 loans. And, you know, the stories that we're hearing now are just outrageous. I just talked to a guy a couple days ago. He originally had borrowed $75,000 for college. Well, today he has repaid $175,000 on his loans, but he still owes $235,000. And remember, not only are bankruptcy rights gone from student loans, but also there are no statutes of limitations. And so this is really kind of a 1-2 punch that, you know, it gives the lending system the a license to steal. And unfortunately, the Department of Education has gotten in on the business. And so it's just a mess. And I'm so disappointed that Congress has been unable to return this protection. It's just so disturbing and off-putting.
All right, Alan, final question for you. Let's wave the magic wand and say you have the magical power to write an executive order that would be signed by the president today. What would be in that executive order in terms of canceling student debt?
I would completely cancel all federally held loans. I would return bankruptcy protections to the loans that remain. And I would literally disband the Office of Federal Student Aid and start over again. I would, if there is even to be a lending system in the future, at the minimum, there's got to be constitutional bankruptcy protections behind the loans to keep the system stable and the prices rational. That would be a good place to start. You know, it may very well be that the government maybe has no business being in the lending business as well. And so, you know, maybe it's time to return to a time where, you know, the institutions were funded directly by the government rather than using these student loans to put on the backs of the students. Most civilized countries, you know, do it that way. Germany, most of Europe, there essentially are no student loans. And I don't see why there's any reason that the most powerful country in the world can't do something similar.
We've been speaking with Alan Cullen.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Alan. Yep.
Well, this current lending system is over the hill. It's toast. Put a fork in it.
Oh, absolutely. Especially when you look at the debt collection industry that's associated with student loans. Yeah, that's certainly very broken.
It's obscene and disgusting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, that's Alan Cullen of Student Loan Justice. Alan, we are unfortunately up against the clock, but really do appreciate the time today. You can learn more at studentloanjustice.org, studentloanjustice.org, to follow along, because I assume, Alan, you're going to be involved in talking to folks at the Democratic Convention coming up a little bit later on this summer, same with the Republican Convention as well, correct?
That's absolutely right. We'll be in Milwaukee in July, and we'll be in Chapel Hill in August. And hopefully the petition that we started on change.org will have 1 million or more signatures by then. We've got 250,000 now, and people can find that on the website. But certainly I would hope that they would help us build that petition in the meantime.
Oh, good point to bring up as well. Yeah, you do have that petition over at change.org. Hey, Alan, really appreciate the time today.
Thank you, Brett. It's been a pleasure.
Always good to get Alan on the airwaves with us talking about student loan justice and the need to cancel student loan debt, or at the very least reduce it, which is something we've seen very little action on in Congress. We're going to take a break, come on back with our final segment. We do have open phone lines now, so you should be able to call us during the break and get on the airwaves if you'd like to chime in on anything we've been talking about.
Think your company's safe? Your staff is working from home, right? As I speak, cyber criminals are mounting attacks across the country. Remember, when we're weakest, cyber criminals attack. Hi, Mark Sommerfeld from Rimark. The Rimark team is guiding our clients through these difficult times. In fact, demand has been so high, we created an easy-to-follow guide. It's yours free. Download our 5 steps to securely work from home now at RimarkIT.com or call 651-328-8900 for a no-cost how-to discussion.
Hi, everybody out there in AM 950 Radio Land. This is Paul Metza inviting you to listen to a great new episode on the Wall of Power Radio Hour Weekend. We're featuring Bob Dylan's new record, his 39th. Some are considering it a masterpiece, called Rough and Rowdy Ways. We play several tracks, and we talk with great liberal blogger, columnist for Esquire.com, Mr. Charlie Pierce, about it. Charlie's a big Dylan fan like I am. We have a lot of fun and listen to some music. This Saturday at 6 p.m. on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
Minnehaha Falls Landscaping creates outdoor environments that grow beauty and support health and wellness. We provide everything needed for people and pollinators to grow healthy together in the home landscape. Contact us for landscape renovations, patios, walkways, retaining walls, butterfly gardens, rain gardens, and bee lawns. Minnehaha Falls Landscaping is a business rooted in healthy soil. We rely on soil health to beautify landscapes, restore ecosystems, and protect pollinators. We love sharing our soil secrets with everyone. Visit us at MinnehahaFallsLandscape.com.
We're back for the final segment of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Hey, during this last segment, I want to play back some audio that our buddy Mark and Fridley sent us in regards to a couple of days ago over at the House of Representatives, the U.S. House of Representatives, and an absolute tantrum that was being thrown by far-right Republican Representative Louis Gohmert. So what was happening is that there was testimony talking about from several witnesses how the Justice Department has become publicized. But Republican Representative Louis Gohmert, not happy about that, as he threw a tantrum. Let's play the audio from that now, Patrick.
Report, Jeffrey Berman's supposed resignation and Barr's own role in the events in Lafayette Park come quickly to mind. So does his practice of regularly shrouding himself in the rhetoric and trappings of the rule of law, even as he desecrates and undermines the institutions that make it possible. But to me, Barr's crowning dishonesty is the portrait of Edward
Levy. By the way,
Levy,
that's Louis Gohmert banging his gavel in the background.
Showed hanging on the wall of his conference room as though the current incumbent
Regular order, the witness will conclude.
Regular order, right. We're way beyond regular order.
The witness will continue.
Can I have one more sentence here?
By all means.
All right, so there's an excerpt of what happened from that hearing. Yeah, absolutely unbelievable. And my bigger criticism goes to the committee chair, Jerry Nadler, for really doing nothing to get that under control. Could you imagine that situation if it was the Republicans in the majority and you had a Democratic representative disrupting things like that? All right. Oh, I only got time for about 1 minute worth of phone call. So Randy in St. Cloud, we'll go to you first. You got about 20 seconds to be brilliant. So go ahead.
No pressure.
Yeah.
On the student loan thing, that's why this blue, no matter who, is driving me nuts. Joe Biden is responsible. Your previous guest didn't want to say it directly, but Elizabeth Warren fought him tooth and nail about that bankruptcy bill. That was Joe Biden's little gift to the lender.
All right, Randy, going to have to leave it there. I want to give Mark and Fridley about a few seconds to chime in on the conversation before we wrap things up. Patrick, let's see if we can get the buttons pressed in time. Mark, you got like 20 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to alert everybody what happened yesterday, because the single item in the Dodd-Frank corruption bill was stripped yesterday by the regulatory agencies of the Federal Reserve when they got rid of the Volcker rule.
So everything that... Oh, sorry there, Mark. We are unfortunately out of time. We'll try back on Monday. A reminder, coming up during the 3 o'clock hour, Representative Mary Kunesh-Poudin going to be filling in for Matt McNeil. So tune in for that.